Welcome to episode 11 of Virtually Relevant, Houston VR's AR and VR podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Josh.
This is Kevin.
And I'm William.
It's been a weird few weeks, I think, for everyone, but we do have some VR news, and we are finally going to dive in on pass-through AR, which we've been promising for a while. Obviously, the number one topic in VR news right now is Half-Life Alyx has finally launched. Kevin, you want to dive in on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So I was actually able to get in sometime yesterday. Yeah. It is... So one thing that I kind of want to mention about it is, in a way, it's nothing new.
Right.
They took, like, for the longest time, so many games have been centered around a specific like piece of tech, but Half-Life Alyx has finally kind of come in and wrapped up a whole bunch of this stuff kind of all into one game. So that's what really sets it apart right now, is it's like all the tech demos finally got together and and made this game. But of course, all set within the Half-Life universe that people have been waiting on for such a long time.
How many years has it been?
Let's see. I think it was 13 years ago is when Half-Life 2 came out.
Wow.
And then 10 years ago is when Half-Life 2 Episode 2 came out.
Yeah. So when you say it feels like all the tech demos came together, does it feel like the first, like, fully fleshed out VR specific game that you've played so far?
Maybe for me, probably. Okay. I'm sure there's others out there. Of course, Boneworks launched not too long ago as well.
Right.
And so that was also another big one that was very heavy into physics and everything.
How did the physics feel? Yeah.
Pretty good. So one really cool thing is they do have that system in there where the hand tries to dynamically hold onto objects. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't get it always right, or it's almost like you've got magic hands that just kind of are like they're just covered in glue, and sometimes they just like stick to things like the corner of a box. You're just holding onto this corner of a box and just waving it around like no problem.
It's quantum friction. I mean, it's totally a legit thing.
Well, that's one of the things I've noticed. I've been watching Matt Pat from The Game Theorist play Boneworks on the GT Live channel, and he's playing it on a Rift S. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say Rift S. Actually, it might be a classic Rift. But the point being, he's playing on the standard touch controller, so there's no finger tracking involved as
right.
opposed to like the index controllers.
I'm gonna hijack the index from work and then play through with the index controllers before. The
I
next
am waiting on
podcast.
That too.
Yeah,
you need it to work from home, Eric.
I'll bring it home and you guys can all come over and stand
well,
6 feet from me and
6 try feet it. Apart from each other. Exactly. There's less than 10 of us, so we'll be okay. It definitely is one of those things where I'm like, okay, I don't even necessarily want to jump into Boneworks or Half-Life Alyx without the index controllers, which is not something I was like, I can get by with the touch or, you know, something like that. But watching it be played with the touch definitely seems like there are struggles that he has that would be alleviated by having that finger tracking. Like, you know, he goes to grab a ledge and his hands just aren't like cooperating properly because they're rigged still for all of this extra physics that is not happening with the input mode. So from development standpoint, it's like, okay, you're like, you need to take it down a notch and, you know, not do everything if the input is not XYZ input.
Right. They may refine it. It may be
exactly. And so it sounds
updates.
Like maybe that's what's going on in Alyx as well, but either way, it seems to have been a huge hit.
Yeah. And I think this is probably feel free to differ with me, but I feel like this is the first title that has driven VR hardware sales in a significant way. Maybe an exception's Beat Saber, but I think this may be the first game where people are buying the hardware to play the game instead of buying the hardware and then finding the cool games for the hardware.
Right. I think there's the diehard Half-Life audience out there. There's definitely a significant population out there of PC gamers that are generally willing to buy a little bit of extra hardware in order to play the titles that they're, you know, loyal to. And like Kevin said, what, 13 years, right, waiting for another title that's in the same vein. So,
And we still don't have a Half-Life 3.
No, not yet. they have said
we'll have a Half-Life 4.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not making any commitments as to whether the next game will be, you know, VR specific or not. They've been very cagey. I'm hoping it does well for them and kind of nudges them in that direction. They also acknowledged that they'd said for a while that they had three AAA VR games in development. And they got asked about that, and they said for over the past year, maybe year and a half, everybody that was doing VR work got pulled into this. So that's been it exclusively. So there's not two other games imminently coming out, which is unfortunate, but understandable. Sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of follows with Valve's sort of culture of, okay, we now have this project. Like, historically, from reports, when Valve works on a project, you know, they have that 80-20 model where you kind of do 80% on this project and 20% whatever you want to do, your passion projects.
Right.
And everybody's desk is, like, on wheels so they can move and be like, oh, I want to go work on this project instead. But historically, whenever they have, like, a big flagship title like this, everyone just gets conscripted into, okay, now you're working on this. There are still the smaller teams that, you know, handle their regular ones like Dota and, you know, the other games and the Steam software itself. But everyone who's anyone who can work on it, they kind of just be like, okay, now we need you to be working on this.
Right.
And it's exciting, so most people do. So.
But look, it really paid off for them, right? I mean, Half-Life Alyx had over 300,000 concurrent viewers on Twitch. I mean, that's think about how many TV shows that are out there that are get millions of dollars in marketing, research, and investment to try to get that many viewers concurrent. So,
especially nowadays, when everybody's just like, "Eh, it'll be on Hulu in a day." Yeah. I did see that on the 23rd, it was the number one streaming game on Twitch, which, to the best of my knowledge, is the first time a VR only game has been the number one game on Twitch at any time ever in the history of Twitch. They've certainly been high. They've certainly been popular. But, you know, even if you account for, like, Skyrim VR, Fallout VR, those are ports of a game to VR. This is the first time that a VR-only game, as far as I understand, has been the number one thing.
Although, like, if you don't have Skyrim VR at this point, like, what are you doing with your
it's
life?
It's like $15 right now. There's a sale going on.
That's true.
I think it's the quarantine sale or something I saw. I hope it's not. I did see there was a sale, but I don't think it's called the quarantine sale. I'm still waiting for that, you know, 19% off, whatever. You know, I'm waiting for that to come in. It's sure to hit my inbox at some point.
Right.
Good news is we can all catch up on our backlogs.
Totally.
If you're working from home.
Right.
Go ahead.
The only other perhaps notable bit of VR news, at least on the hardware side, is we got kind of a tease for the what we kind of presume to be the Reverb 2 new headset. We don't have a lot of details on it, so it's sort of an announcement that there will be an announcement at some point, but without an actual date for the announcement. But at least we're seeing, I mean, the Reverb, other than the fact that it was using the Windows MR tracking and hand trackers, was actually a really nice headset. So if they kind of step up their game from that, it could actually be an interesting headset in the market if it landed at the right price point.
Didn't the original Reverb have supposed problems with the screens? And that's kind of why it just went away.
What would you want to see on the Reverb, Eric? Reverb 2.
Well, I definitely would like it to move away from traditional Windows MR hand trackers and tracking. The two camera tracking solution is just really not quite good enough. Unfortunately, the teaser image, if you brightened it up, kind of still looked like it had the two front facing cameras, which didn't give me a ton of hope. But my biggest thing would be, because I love the super high res screens, but if they could get better position tracking and better hand tracking, then that would kind of put it back in the game as something that's worth seriously considering.
Yeah, and isn't the Reverb the highest resolution of the headset, or of, well, probably
well, within
not
the kind
the
of
the highest,
mainstream market. Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's pro level stuff, but things that are arguably within the reach of the average consumer, yes, by a pretty decent margin. It's higher res than the Vive Pro, so
yeah. And from what I've heard, they're working with the Vive on this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, I'm kind of wondering if they will maybe use the Vive system for their tracking then on this one.
It's possible. Hopefully. I mean, there weren't the little dimples that you usually see, but you know, they technically don't have to be, as long as got transparent material, right? You know, to IR, you don't have to have that.
Wouldn't it be interesting to have a two camera inside out tracking system that is bolstered by an outside in tracking system that's like a warehouse scale?
That'd be cool. I mean, in a sense, you've got, you know, the negative, you've got the negatives of having to at least optionally set up external trackers, but I mean,
isn't
if it's
that
a,
what's going on at Zero Latency, honestly, because they're using HP Reverbs as their headsets, aren't they?
Yes.
So they're doing Windows MR tracking with a camera, five camera, or was it only two cameras?
Two cameras.
So it's two camera, and then they're also using OptiTrack or some other optical tracking for everything else, and then they're kind of blending the two. It's the sensor fusion that's happening.
I mean, they're doing that for the guns and so on. I don't remember. Were they tracking the headsets additionally that way, or
I'd have to look at pictures of, right, people actually in it to see. I don't think they were doing actual tracking of the user in that.
Right. But no, these sorts of mixed solutions are potentially interesting. But
Build it, somebody. Tell us how it works.
Hopefully we'll have more news on that soon-ish. Exactly. It's hard to know when things are going to get announced, since pretty much all the conferences are dead. But I guess when they're ready, they'll be ready and they'll say something. So
it is a rough time to run a conference right now.
Oh, it is.
That.
I feel very, very badly for people that had conferences queued up. A lot of them took some very bad hits. I know South by Southwest bled money very badly.
Yeah, and they canceled the Houston Rodeo. That's going to take a huge hit into Houston.
They weren't going to cancel it until someone actually had an active case of COVID-19 at one of the cook-offs.
Right. Well, you think about it now, you've got, you know, GDC canceled, right? Entirely, or did they? They're still putting it on. I'm not sure that stands. A lot of companies have pulled out of that. You know, you've got E3, you've got, you know, depending upon how long everything lasts, you've got, it could affect anything as much as GDC in the next, you know, in the next year.
Well, yeah, so you have to really think, like, even if the new cases are relatively low, do you risk having this mass gathering of people where you could potentially have another outbreak? And then you're that conference that had that outbreak, right?
Yeah, you don't want that publicity. I mean, a lot of us can depend on timing. I'm curious because we were saying that there were rumors, strong rumors, that Oculus Connect was just not going to be continued this year, that it was going to get folded into F8. F8 got canceled. So I wonder if the timing is right, that may still be too soon, but if the timing's it might actually give it
Oculus
a second
Connect.
Chance. Yeah, yes. It could rescue it. So who knows?
Yeah,
at least for another year.
One more year.
Well, we'll see. All that remains to be seen. You know, obviously we're hoping it ends soon.
HTC had a pretty good conference in VR that they used the Engage platform. And saw a really good turnout, so...
No, definitely. Maybe in our next episode, we'll start talking about collaboration in VR. And there's a lot of options out there. And that's a lot of people are kind of experimenting with that now, since they're having to work from home or collaborate remotely. But for this time, we're finally kind of diving into the long-promised deep dive into pass-through AR. You know, VR and AR overlap heavily. Probably 60-75% of the tech is common to both of them. You need position tracking, you know, head tracking, in some cases hand tracking. There's a lot of optical questions that are potentially relevant to both. But I think everyone will recognize that AR is lagging significantly behind VR for a lot of reasons, a lot of very good and valid reasons. It's a tougher nut to crack. And so that kind of puts people in a difficult position as far as developing for AR because there's just not, I mean, you know, the HoloLens 2 is out there. It's not terrible, but it's not a general purpose solution at all. So a possibility, a thing that is promising for proof of concept work or work within an office or prototyping work for the upcoming AR headsets that we know are going to get here and people like Apple are working very hard on, is something called pass-through AR. Josh, you want to talk about it a bit?
Sure. So, you know, pass-through AR is the concept that you have some kind of camera or input on the outside of your device, and you're taking that back to some kind of compute unit, whether it's something you're wearing or something that you're connected to through a tether, like a computer, and then compositing the outside world data through a bunch of different algorithms into a virtual experience. So you essentially end up with something that allows you to take as much digital content as you want and composite it onto what's happening in the outside world.
While the term AR gets thrown about very loosely on things like smartphone pass-through and things like that, when we're talking about headsets, when we say AR, when people in the community say AR, they mean that some of the photons that are hitting your eye are coming in from the real world. You're actually looking out and seeing light reflected off of real objects, and then additional things are getting overlaid onto that optically. So when we talk through, you know, about pass-through AR, that's not happening at all. I mean, everything is being rendered in what would be a VR headset, except that it's displaying images from the real world. So, and we've seen people play with this before. We had a Zed that showed up at the meetup. I think Han brought one in where you strapped a couple of cameras on the front and it fed through the PC in. Typically, the challenge has been latency. There's typically a significant amount of latency and often some field of view issues. How many people actually got to try the Zed?
Yeah, I tried it at the meetup.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I tried it as well.
William, what did you think?
I thought it was good. The big thing, like you mentioned, latency. Latency is pretty much the name of the game when it comes to pass through anything, whether that's
right.
AR, whether that's trying to do just a pass through window to see around. Anybody who's ever used the pass through mode of the Quest or the original Vive knows that, you know, there's a lot of things that affect how good that pass through is.
Sure.
Obviously with the original Vive, you had that single camera center down mounted. And so everything was kind of skewed, and it made you kind of, you had to kind of get your sea legs when you were doing anything.
Definitely,
with it.
Yeah.
The Zed doesn't really suffer from that very much. It does have seem to have a little bit narrower field of view from my memory.
Yeah.
But it's passable. It works. Is it perfect? No. But is it a viable solution that's out there right now? If that is the thing you're going for and you're working with it right now and you're developing content, I think that's it's a viable way to go, especially because last time he was there, he had it working on the Quest, I think.
Yes. I think it was still a Rift, but
yeah.
There is a Z2, I believe, that has a higher res and a wider field of view. I have not gotten to try that.
Plus, with the data speeds that you're getting on USB-C, if you're going through the Quest, you probably get a lot faster.
Right. That's a good point.
Throughput.
It's worth contrasting that with, I mean, there are some dedicated solutions. I believe the Vive Pro has an SDK where you can work with this, or the Vive Pro I guess is the surviving variant. But the first one I've seen where I said, okay, the latency is low enough that it doesn't bother me, that I could actually use this for pass-through AR work. At the Industrial VR AR Forum, I got to try the Vario XR1 and was deeply impressed. Josh, you've got some significant experience with that headset. Would you like to talk about it?
Yeah. So I'm privileged to be able to work with one of these headsets pretty often. A lot of our clients at Mace use these headsets or are interested in investing in these headsets. They are at the higher end, the premium range of pricing, and are sold exclusively to businesses, which is why probably most people haven't heard of them. But the XR1, it all, always stays under 20 milliseconds, as I understand, but generally hits below 10 millisecond latency for the image compositing. So the human eye, the way we work, the way our physiology is that the fastest we can interpret data is, I believe, is about 13 milliseconds. And so if you can get below that threshold with the images that you're putting from, you're taking it out from the real world and you're putting over digital data over that, if you can consistently stay under 13 milliseconds, the human eye will never be able to understand or interpret that you're showing it something that isn't a part of the real world. So the Vario, the XR1 developer kit, right? So this is a hardware solution that is built to get it's a working developer unit that allows people to start to ideate and create innovative solutions around this idea of pass-through AR. So it gives you a full 90-degree field of view. So it gives you the total immersion that you're used to with a VR headset, but it allows you to pull in as much or as little of the real world on the fly as you want. One of the things that they were showing off recently on one of their webinars that they did a live stream on YouTube was green screen native compatibility. So you could use a green screen environment around that pass-through to even further bring in fidelity, like be able to bring in your hands with crystal clarity and occlude all the surrounding environment from your body and bring your entire body or parts of it, however much you wanted, into the digital experience, right? And then they brought that even further, where they could the headset could track up to 500 different track targets in an environment. So if you wanted to have a piece of paper be an iPad in your VR or pass-through AR experience, then you could put targets on there that could be tracked not just by your headset, but by multiple headsets.
That's a very interesting idea. I had not seen people talking about doing multi-user pass-through AR in the same space. That could actually be extremely powerful. That would be a really interesting application.
So using like fiduciary markers?
Yes.
Okay.
When I got to try it, I was not in a green screen environment. It did have support for trying to cut out your hands and have your hands occlude the graphics behind it. And given that it was working entirely optically off of that, it did a credible job. But I mean, the boundaries of the hands were rough. I mean, it didn't feel seamless. Whereas I'm guessing with a green screen environment, that would be much smoother and that'd be very welcome.
Right. It gives the computing algorithm some kind of breathing room to understand depth and where your hands actually are. I mean, one of still the bigger drawbacks of this kind of technology, and like you were talking about earlier, Eric, the way augmented reality is kind of lagging behind, is because trying to interpret depth in just a pixel interpretation, like this pixel is darker than this pixel is, and trying to say with any kind of confidence that that means that that's further behind or closer up to the camera, and trying to understand the three-dimensional map of the environment, is very, very difficult. And people have been trying to crack that nut for decades. Right. So adding the green screen allows you to easily remove a part of the environment to give more computing processing power to just doing that pass-through AR and making sure that latency stays under that 13 milliseconds.
The demo I tried, you know, it passed through the expo floor, and I sat down in this chair, and then it wrapped the cabin of a car around me, and I could still see the trade show through the windshield and so on. And I mean, it really felt like that moment from Wizard of Oz where Dorothy opens the door and steps out from black and white into color. It was that kind of revelatory of a moment of like, oh, wow, this is a whole new world. That's really cool. Obviously, that's something I'm hoping trickles down into headsets that are available to mere mortals as opposed to corporations with some deeper pockets. But the work's got to be done somewhere. And it absolutely makes sense that it gets done at the higher end where people are willing to pay a premium because they need it.
Yeah, high-fiving with someone in real life while wearing the headset. That was my seeing color moment for sure.
Yeah, they did that for me too, and I was shocked by the fact that there was just no perceptible lag in that. I mean, I absolutely felt the contact with the hand at the exact moment I saw it. So the latency was low enough that it was not really perceptible to me. So right. The only thing that I will say negative, and it's not really a negative, it's more of a, I always wish for more. I always want more. The thing that I think makes the Vario headsets phenomenal is they've got the super high res area in the center. It's not a huge area, but a decent chunk in the middle of your screen is much closer to Retina resolution. For very obvious technical reasons, the cameras aren't recording at those resolutions and passing through. So whenever you get the pass through, it's kind of at, I mean, you know, sort of like Vive Pro levels of resolution across your entire field of view. But it is your entire field of view, and it is very low latency, so it's extremely cool. But if it had that extra layer of clarity right in the center, that would have, you know, completely pushed it to a new level. So maybe in the future.
This is where you can see where a dev kit, you know,
yeah,
proving out a piece of hardware and giving a specific dedicated hardware SKU to customers that want to invest in this and put this in their business pipeline, that we could get to a point where you have that, like, just butter smooth, perfect iteration of equipment. And that's just, you know, R&D time. That's just, you know.
No, I mean, even the, I'm not even sure how you do it with like the data bandwidth required to push at those speeds and those resolutions. But either way, it is the first pass through AR solution that genuinely impressed me. So
yeah, they had to really do a lot of heavy lifting on getting the right sensors for the cameras, the low latency cameras, it's a fiber optic channel that runs directly from the cameras back to the computer. Like there's a lot of elegant solution work that went into making something that you just throw on like a VR headset and you have this pretty transformative experience.
Right. You know, I'm suspecting that maybe in the future you'll end up with sort of a hybrid solution where the display of the visual data that's coming from the cameras is being captured and composited at the headset with local processing like the Quest, but the image is being sent back to the PC or to a higher end processor for, you know, analytics to do things like occlusion and, sure, you know, optic tracking. But that way you keep the latency extremely low on what actually gets displayed, but you've got the ability to actually interpret the data elsewhere.
Well, I mean, I've been saying for years that we're, you know, eventually going to see computer towers retired, then eventually laptops retired for smaller and smaller form factors. I mean, look at our smartphones. I don't know, the iPhone 3GS was more powerful than the lunar lander that went to the moon for the first time or something like that. There's generational exponential leaps in capability of hardware and chipsets that come out. And now that we have this widespread deep investment and push for immersive technologies, the R&D dollars are going to be driven in that in such a direction so that we are going to see a further miniaturization, a further utilization, that we're going to eventually see something like just a, you know, the perfect solution that's wireless and does everything on the unit and interprets depth mapping and all that kind of fun stuff on the fly.
I'm hoping we get some depth cameras on these things at some point, because there's a lot of benefit to being able to blend that data with optical data.
Yeah, the VR2 Pro, the Vario's VR2 Pro has the Ultra Leap.
Ultra Leap,
Yeah. So it's technically like a depth mapping camera with some right. infrared camera and stuff that does hand tracking. But that sure. came out after the XR1. So I would expect to see some integration moving forward.
Yeah, maybe XR2. There's other headsets that are either coming out or have come out or are on the horizon. HTC announced a headset called the Proton. Well, announced is the wrong word. Teased the Proton, which is a concept. They've got renders of it. But it has a strong pass-through AR component. I don't think we're going to know a ton more until they actually reach a point where they're demoing it at trade shows, if trade shows exist anymore, or they announce a release date for a dev kit. But I think it was sort of aspirational. It was a, here's what we're aiming for. And it definitely had a strong pass-through AR component to it. Did anyone have any thoughts on the Proton?
They look really, really interesting.
Yeah.
That was my biggest takeaway. Bug eyes. Reminds me of like a fly's fast.
Oh, yes,
eyeball.
That one.
Yeah, okay. That one.
Yeah, yeah.
It does have a very bug eye sort of look.
Yes.
It's an intriguing looking headset. I mean, they did a lot of interesting things. Like these are computer renders, but pushing all the battery and the computation stuff into the back of the headset to balance out the front and keep the front thinner. It looked like, if I remember correctly, they were using micro displays and pancake lenses. Wasn't that the claim, to make the front much thinner than traditional?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was kind of a laundry list of all the cool new stuff that we know we could be doing. It was a bit of a hand waving going, we're totally using all that new stuff in this headset. And I hope they do.
What's interesting is, based on the renders, there still looks to be only two cameras.
Yeah, that was baffling.
Which is like, okay, so you've made all these steps forward, and then you're not taking cues from these other headsets where they're putting, you know, 4, 5, 6 cameras on it.
Yeah.
Especially after didn't they just do that? Or no, that was the Reverb that did that.
Reverb
back.
Was still too. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that the Windows MR line has mostly died out, because felt like, I mean, two cameras was not quite adequate. It really wasn't. Honestly, at this point, anything that comes out with less than four cameras, I'm offended by. I mean, it's just, it feels
not interested.
Yeah, it feels lazy, and it just, you know, why would you do that?
Right. It ends up being a situation where, like, you see less than four cameras and you go, oh, the tracking on this is gonna suck.
Right.
But the Proton looks like ski goggles, and it looks like just something more that you see as, I don't know, over large, ridiculously sized sunglasses.
Right. And I mean, here's the thing: the HTC's Proton is almost certainly, given the two cameras, it's almost certainly using lighthouse tracking, which is good, but it is definitely work to set up and to move. And I will say, between the Quest and the Rift S, people are spoiled now. You can't ask them to go back. Like, I had a guy talking to me yesterday about it. He's like, hey, you know, what do I need to do to get into this? You know, how much is it? You know, what's it going to be? What do I need to have? What do I need to do? I was like,
right.
Look, at this point, it's so easy. I'm like, go down to Best Buy, pick up a Rift S. It's, you know, plug into the display port and plug into a USB 3.0. And if you've got at least a 1060, like, you're off to the races. There's no extra setup. There's no extra making sure you have the right card to give the right voltage to your cameras and fiddling with all that. Like, it's just plug and go. Like,
the barriers to entry have definitely dropped. I mean, obviously I'm torn, because without question, the highest quality tracking I've seen is with, you know, the 2.0 lighthouse base stations and, you know, something like the Index. But I mean, that really does, I mean, there's a lot of setup if you're moving anywhere, and it really does tie you to a location where you've done setup. I have gotten very, very spoiled with good outward facing tracking.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think at this point it becomes a very hard sell, except in sort of niche cases where you need absolutely the highest tracking, or if you need tracking well beyond the bounds of the field of view of the headset. That's always been like, with the Quest, you know, there's limits to quite how far you can push your hands out and still have them accurately tracked. And that's honestly as much as, I mean, with the two camera solutions for position tracking, in theory, you could get good enough algorithms to make the position tracking work well with that. I mean, we do it with two eyes and we do it very well, but you often want to be able to track your hands outside of your immediate field of view. And with just two front-facing cameras, it really, really limits the area that your hands can be tracked in, unless you go with an alternative solution like magnetic tracking, which is a little exotic, but I mean, like, the Pico does it, so it is at least possible.
Right. It's just the difficulty of having a fast enough camera sensor that is high enough resolution that can composite the data fast enough and can do it, whether it's onboard or off board, and then a pass through. Like, we're just working through all those hurdles right now. Like, I found it really interesting about the Proton that one of the designs wasn't that the unit was on the back of the head, that it was like a, you know, like a kind of a magic leap with a puck on that you wore right. on your hip or something.
Right.
Because one of the major feedbacks that they got, they wanted to do 5G wireless connection with the headset. But a lot of the test cases that they got feedback from were that no one wanted to have a 5G antenna anywhere near their head.
Sounds about right. It just gives you a little bit of cancer.
Like, nah, I mean, yeah, not much. Just a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some other things on the horizon.
No right, one knows. Right. Unconfirmed.
briefly touch on the Canon MD20. Canon has produced a couple of pass-through AR headsets. You don't hear much about them, and part of the reason is that even by the standards of high-end headsets, the cost is astronomical, tens of thousands. I believe the MD20 is, what, 25, 30,000? And they're bulky, they're heavy. Obviously, specialty items for extremely specific uses where you are writing all the software for it yourself, and you absolutely need, you know, the highest quality. We don't even, I think, know a ton about it because, I mean, there's so few units in the wild, and they're all being used by companies for work that they're not talking about publicly. So it's barely a mainstream product. Does anyone know any more about the MD20?
Well, if it's $25,000, that's cheaper than their previous $82,000 camera.
$82,000,
good lord. Wow. Yeah. Sorry, it was a headset that they were doing, but yeah. $82,000.
Yeah, so, I mean, not even really in the range for small business. This is, you know, Toyota's probably picking them up for design work, things like that.
Right.
Right. It's just very bespoke, right?
Right.
They have a customer that has a problem, and they're solving it with custom R&D, custom spin-up time. And
yeah.
Like, if we had talked numbers all day long, but none of it really equates to average dollar amounts that we're used to talking about, unless we're talking about like industrial R&D and engineering, right?
So right.
It's like it's built for a project that is then spun up and spun out and is done
sure.
typically within the lifespan of that project.
There's a company, I believe, out of France. They've got this Lynx R1 headset that they're touting as the first standalone pass-through AR headset. So, I mean, kind of like the Quest in that it doesn't, you know, have to be tethered to anything. It's got some unique optical properties. It's using these sort of cast lenses that are, they're thick, and they've got these concave indentions on four sides near your eye, and it's internally reflecting that back to you from the center. And that's got a lot of interesting properties to it. One of which is that, at least theoretically, there's a dead spot in the middle where you can see image because of the internal reflections filling it in, but you could actually put your eye tracking camera dead center in front of your eyes, which solves a number of challenges. If you think of like a Schmidt-Cassegrain telescope or a Muscatov-Cassegrain telescope where, you know, you're bouncing off of an internal mirror in the center, but you're not actually ending up with a dead spot because of the way the reflections work. It's the same kind of idea. And the cool thing is that because of the way these lenses are cast out of lucite or something, they're cheap to produce. I mean, they were expensive to develop, but as far as mass producing them, they're just pouring plastic into a mold. So, you know, that's intriguing. That one, I think, is landing in the, you know, couple of thousand dollar range, isn't
$1,500.
That's verging on prosumer. I mean, that's certainly yeah. accessible to small business and even well-heeled enthusiasts.
I'm super interested to see the productized version of this, because the center of eye tracking, it being a standalone headset, it using the Snapdragon XR2 chip that's built explicitly for you know, XR related, VR AR related hardware. Like, it's something, you think about how much we cram into a Snapdragon 835 with the Quest, right?
Yeah.
And how even still a lot of experiences on the Quest don't max out the hardware because we're trying to play it safe and trying to make sure we hit frame rate. Just imagine what more we can push through an XR2, right?
I am excited to see the more recent and VR-specific chips hitting some actual headsets, because that's certainly, as someone who spends a lot of time trying to hit frame rate on a Quest, the idea of those having a little more margin for error there is extremely appealing.
And the crazy optics on it, man. Like if you're a nerd like we are about all this stuff, just looking at them showing the prototype lenses, the quad focal, I guess.
Right.
It kind of reminds me of like those little fortune telling games that you would see in elementary school. Like you like green, yellow, red, purple. No, he's not gonna marry you.
Right.
You
know?
Okay. This is the one that looks like basically it's like a cut gym on the back of it.
Yes, it does. Okay, yes. And I mean, the folding metaphor is very apt. I mean, it is actually folding light back across the same path, the same as a pancake lens would. So one of the major benefits is that you can cut the distance between the screen and your eye dramatically. The more times you bounce things through, the more you can narrow that distance, but you can at least reduce the distance by half. So, and with that distance, I mean, you get the whole lever action of, you know, weight at the end of a lever is multiplied out. So by bringing some of that weight closer to your face, it feels lighter than it would with that same amount of weight pushed further out.
So the quick specs on it are integrated audio, controller-free hand tracking, eye tracking, 6 gigs of RAM using the XR2 Snapdragon chipset, 128 gigs of storage, Wi-Fi 6, 802.11ax, Bluetooth 5, and a USB Type-C port with roughly 2 hours of quote-unquote active use battery life.
Okay. It's a pretty promising set of specs. I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, it's targeting a chunk above the consumer market. But, I mean, the consumer market probably isn't really ready for, you know, this type of headset to go mainstream, but it's an extremely exciting, extremely promising form factor and set of specs. I hope they knock it out of the park, and I would love to see that be good enough for people to do some prototyping work and make some killer apps and then bring it down into the consumer space. So,
And for the nitty gritty on the optics, they call it a fourfold catadioptric freeform prism.
In case anybody
wants to take us to the...
Yeah, okay. Now you know. So, but
so the last little bit, obviously, is... So there's a pass-through faceplate for Vive Cosmos,
right?
Oh,
good lord. Yes. There's a lot of faceplates for the Vive...
The headset that resurrected the brand, right?
Right, yes.
That's the correct...
oh, my gosh.
The correct
one. Hey, Vive Pro is end of life, man.
Well, yeah, but the Pro Eye is still out there. But the...
True.
The Cosmos just was never a compelling sell at its price point. It's not a terrible headset. It's just...
Yeah, well...
Wow.
Go ahead. Right. Go ahead,
Kevin's
Kevin.
Kevin's got some feelings.
Step up, Kevin.
Well, it's just I've really heard nothing all that great about it. It's like the hand-controlling trackers that they use.
Yeah.
They just, like, eat through batteries. It's 200 to 300 more, depending on which headset you get for the Quest. Sure. It's just it like a lot of things with this one do not make sense.
I'm with whenever
they came out with this, you know,
it's hard to know who the target market is. I mean, I'm trying to imagine who is the user that you say this is the sweet spot for you. This is the one you want to buy, and I just don't know who that is. I mean,
yeah, it's the people that wanted a Vive Pro but can't buy a Vive Pro anymore.
Right.
Not even.
But But yeah, they've just recently announced a stack of faceplates. That was one of the selling points of it was, oh, it has these swappable faceplates. You can swap in different sets of functionality. And they've got the Elite that lets it use Steam VR tracking. But the possibly the only really interesting faceplate for it is the one that adds pass-through tracking, pass-through cameras. It's being marketed as a dev kit, whereas the rest of them are consumer targeted, at least theoretically. A thing that struck me as notable about it, because they wanted to preserve the positioning of all of their inside-out tracking cameras, the tracking cameras are lined up with your eyes, and the actual pass-through cameras are about like an inch and a half below your eyes, which feels to me like that's going to be really
weird
because you're going to feel about an inch and a half shorter all the time.
It's also going to make you feel weird whenever you go to, you know, if like your hands are in
right.
the shot. Like it's the same problem you had with the original Vive, that right. camera was about an inch below where your eyes are in the headset. And so, basically it's at the tip of your nose or so is where that camera is.
Right.
And so as soon as you reach out, like you immediately notice
there's something wrong. That's not
right. And it kind of gives you that weird feeling.
What's wrong with being shorter, William? I don't
understand. Nothing's wrong with being shorter. I'm just saying, it's if you feel like you're a certain height, then and suddenly your arms got lowered an inch, you'd feel a little weird about it for a little while.
Right. Everywhere you're reaching, you're an inch off. And everywhere you're looking is an inch off of where you think it is. I don't know. It may be completely transparent in practice. I do not know.
Right.
But at least instinctively, that strikes me as a kind of a suboptimal choice. But we'll see.
So what's the, after we've gone through these different options, what's on the market now? What's soon to be on the market, like the Lynx? What is something that you think that is not being focused on that should be for something like pass-through AR?
Given that it's going to be a while before we see true consumer AR in a form factor that's, you know, something where you can throw on a pair of sunglasses, walk out into the world, and have it with you all day. We're a few years out from that, I think. All of these pass-through AR solutions, with the potential exception of the Lynx, are tethered. I think there's a lot of opportunity for collaboration work in sort of virtual offices, mm-hmm. being able to see, oh, okay, I can see my keyboard, I can see my drink, I can see these different things, but I'm also integrating, you know, my virtual office mates and, you know, elements of my virtual, you know, I've got virtual screens thrown up on the walls, things like that.
Right.
I think that's a real potential market. And I mean, it kind of goes towards Michael Abrash's vision of this whole sort of collaborative virtual office. And that feels very achievable. And that would actually be something that would be completely fine with a tethered pass-through AR headset.
Yeah, I mean, but, like a transmitter that's talking to Internet of Things devices,
sure.
If this then that devices, like just the ever-growing presence of technology that we're integrating with our everyday life, right? Like if your pass-through AR tetherless headset that's this perfect ideation could talk to your smart home as you walk through it and help generate and offload some of the work on understanding where you are and like all these things working together in concert, I think is definitely where we're heading, right?
Sure.
I disagree.
Okay.
I feel like that's the opposite. Like the other side of that coin is the where I feel like things are honestly going. Because you're in a situation where, okay, pass-through AR for me has very limited use case. Because what you're talking about doing is you're talking about bringing the real world into your virtual world to a limited degree. Which has limited uses in the case of, okay, so pass-through AR, why would you be doing that for teleconferencing? Okay, well, you want to have your virtual coworkers in the space with you. Okay, great. So you're going to pass through the entirety of the real world and then simulate the user, right? It pass-through AR to me is a half step between here and actual full AR. And so I think it is a good concept, and it is a good stepping stone for content, especially. It's a good proving ground for content. But I think ultimately the future we're really leading toward is going to be an AR headset that can fully obscure your vision. And
yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I think that's what everyone wants. But this at least gives you something. I mean, it's right. The equivalent of like the old DK1 developer kit. It gives you,
right.
It gives developers something where they can prove it out. They can build their killer app and have it ready and all the bugs knocked out of it before the real hardware arrives.
I would say that like your full AR solution in the long term is technically just going to be a really refined, really pure and butter smooth pass through AR. Like you're just going to have this ability to take the outside world and model it and change it however you see fit.
Well, but by definition, pass-through AR is occluding the real world and then bringing it back in. You're adding an additional layer of abstraction. When I think about what we're moving towards, is there is no layer of abstraction. Either it's glass or it's some other format of getting the digitized images to your optic, your optics. Whether that's projecting directly onto the cornea or something crazy that we haven't all thought, hijacking the optic nerve itself, whatever it ends up being in the long term. But pass-through automatically implies the idea of take away the real world, then bring it back and add elements.
And a thing that I think it's worth giving some...
Which is additional computational.
It is. One of the things I think is worth giving some consideration to, one of the things that's a real benefit to actual AR, where the photons are coming in from the real world, is other people can see your eyes. So there's that, you don't have that social barrier of I've got a box strapped to my face. And even though I can see you, you can't see my eyes. And that's just weird and off-putting. So, I mean, you've got to get a form factor that's right. Frankly, talking to someone who's in a HoloLens 2 doesn't feel natural and comfortable either, but at least you can kind of see their eyes.
I mean, you could just get an implant in your cerebral cortex, exactly. Like there the feed. Go.
Just tap the skull and let's just hijack that optic nerve and we're good to go.
If you ever want to have questionable whether or not you can sleep at night, the feed, the show about direct integration into your brainstem with this kind of technology, that's a real fun rabbit hole to go down.
It's just totally. It's like the Matrix. You got to plug in or something.
Right.
But then what happens when you're simulated, it's you're being fed the simulation that you unplugged and you really didn't.
Ooh.
Right. Dun, dun, dun.
Take both the pills.
Uh-huh. Got to go another layer deeper. It's suddenly inception, but that's probably a topic for another time.
Yeah. No. I mean, someday we should
what
talk.
What does it mean to be alive?
Right. Anyway, that's I think that's probably the kind of breadth of pass-through AR that's out there, or at least on the immediate horizon. Yeah. Given the situation in the world today, we'll almost certainly be talking about remote collaboration in VR, because I think a whole lot of people are going to be looking closely at that. And while there are a sort of astonishing array of possible solutions out there, because the need for it wasn't super pressing, none of them quite feel like a home run, but there are a lot of them that have decent subsets that might be completely perfect for a particular use. So we'll dive into that in an upcoming episode.
So if you have any kind of feedback, if you have anything that you're going through, if you're in school right now and you have to do some kind of coursework on your computer and you decided to do it in some kind of immersive technology or meet with your classmates through some kind of VR solution, or if you have some kind of pass-through AR that we missed on this topic, please reach out, let us know, contact us. We'd be more than happy to cover it on our next podcast.
Yep. Sounds great.
Thank you all for listening.
Yep. Thanks.
Ciao.
All right. We'll see y'all next time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Virtually Irrelevant. If you liked it, please consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite podcast app. Helps bring us up in the charts and makes us easier to find. If you'd like to support Houston VR and this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/HoustonVR. Until next time, thanks for listening.